This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. Leering, honking, whistling, catcalling. Street harassment can be scary and even dangerous for commuters every time they leave their homes, especially women commuters. We asked for your stories about receiving unwanted attention on the street, and wow, did we get a lot of responses from you. Here's just one story that a listener left in our inbox.
My name is Kit, and I'm originally from New York City. I have been a bike messenger for many years there, and my experiences with catcalling have been absolutely atrocious. I've had men wolf whistle me, comment on my body, spit at me, pretty much anything you can think of that makes me feel like my body is in danger when I don't respond positively to a man commenting on my body. Catcalling absolutely sucks. It makes me feel like I have no power. It makes me feel like I am weak, and it makes me feel like I'm less than a human.
Street harassment complicates women's commutes to work, to school, and every destination in between. But historically, not a lot has been done to protect commuters, to make things safer. Well, since 2012, Tatiana Fazlalizadeh has been working to change that with her street art portrait series. It's called Stop Telling Women to Smile. Tatiana is now the author of a new book of portraits and interviews with women who've experienced street harassment. It's called Stop Telling Women to Smile, Stories of Street Harassment and How We're Taking Back Our Power. Tatiana joins me now from NPR in New York City. Tatiana, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you for having me.
By the way, you can find photos of Tatiana's artwork on the website, the1a.org. We'll be tweeting out some images of her work from the book during this show. Tatiana, you started the Stop Telling Women to Smile movement as a street art project, as I said, back in 2012. Talk a little bit about what inspired you to do that. How did the art project get started?
Sure. So the art project got started from my own experiences with street harassment. I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and I was working as a public artist. So I was working on murals and these really large public art pieces. And during that time, I was also experiencing street harassment, catcalling, just this sort of everyday, what I considered verbal abuse that I was experiencing on the street. And so the idea for the artwork really came from merging the two things that were happening to me at the same time, which was creating art in the public space and experiencing street harassment. I decided that it would be great to have artwork in the street that was addressing this experience that I was having, that was talking very directly about how I was experiencing the street. Men catcalling me, being called baby, being told to smile, comments on my body. What if there was a piece of artwork out there that was talking to men, talking to the harassers, and telling them to stop doing that? And so I created the work.
You say in the book, sometimes I speak up for myself when I'm harassed, and other times I don't. With this art project, I could take the words that swirled in my head that I didn't say aloud and put them out into the world. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think a lot of times for myself, and I think for a lot of other women, we don't speak back when we are being harassed in the street. And there's reasons for that, you know, fear of our safety, just not knowing what to say or how to respond. And so for me as an artist, being able to put that into my artwork was really just the best format for me.
So in your book, you mentioned that street harassment started at a very early age for you. How old were you the first time somebody catcalled or leered at you or called attention to you on the street?
You know, I was probably 10 or 11 years old. I lived in Oklahoma City. I grew up in Oklahoma. And, you know, there isn't many opportunities where we're out in the street. It's a very, it's a driving culture there. But when I was young in middle school and high school, I'd walk to the bus stop, you know, being picked up from the bus or even walking from my mom's car to the grocery store, the parking lot. Just any point where I was outside. Once I became, you know, an early teen, I started to get the looks from adult men and these comments sometimes from adult men too when I was young. And most of the women that I've talked to over the years, and especially in the book, say the same thing, that it happened to them when they were young, preteens, youth, as soon as they started to become a visible person in the street as a girl, they were being harassed.
Tatiana, for anyone who doesn't understand quite what you're talking about, talk about the enormity, because one thing that really comes out in the book is it's not one catcall once a month that you brush off. It's not two. It's the enormity.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we talk about this and people, you know, say, well, what happened to you, as if it was one thing that happened to me, as if I had this really terrible experience in the street and that was it. It's not that. It's really the fact that every day when I walk out of my house, I will probably be catcalled. If I am not, the threat of it is there, and it has been there for years, since I was 10 or 11 years old. It's a huge thing. It's a huge burden. It's a huge problem that follows you, that's there, that seems to never be going away. I can walk, especially in New York City, I can walk for a couple of blocks and receive a few catcalls, a few men saying things to me, and they can be anything from a comment on my body to something that's very aggressive to, if I don't respond, I get cursed out. It's there all the time. I think that's what I'm trying to get to people and get to folks who are trying to understand exactly the problem of street harassment, the fact that it is this pervasive thing that doesn't seem to be going away, that we deal with all the time, have dealt with all the time for years, and it looks like we will continue to be dealing with.
Catherine emailed this. When I lived in Manhattan for 3.5 years in the early 90s, I experienced street harassment on a daily basis without exception. It was horrible. It was demoralizing, humiliating, and threatening. It meant that every day I would have to gird myself for comments from people out on the street. And at times, I would avoid certain streets or even neighborhoods where I felt more vulnerable. And Tatiana, Catherine's comment speaks to the pervasiveness that you're talking about, the enormity, the not the one incident or two or ten, but the what sounds to me like the daily grind of this kind of treatment.
Yeah, and her comment also speaks to the fact that we have to navigate the streets in a way that we are avoiding this thing. So we are now rerouting ourselves. We are avoiding certain corners. We're avoiding certain streets. We're covering ourselves. We are constantly thinking about when we leave our houses, how are we going to get to where we're going to go, knowing that we have to face this harassment. And it's something that we have to think about mentally. We have to think about economically. Do I need to take a car, an Uber or a Lyft instead of taking the train? We have to think about it physically. Do I need to cover myself? Am I going to be attacked if I wear this? It's something that it's always on our mind.
So early, you talked about your early experiences with harassment as a girl in Oklahoma City and parking lots and other places. These early experiences really do stick with people. And we heard from a caller who told us about her first encounter with unwanted attention during her commute and how scary it was.
I'm Emily. I'm calling from Arlington. I still remember the first time I experienced street harassment. I was about 12 years old and was walking in my neighborhood, and two men about 10 years older than me were following me in their car, complimenting me, and pulled into a driveway to block my way of walking just so they could tell me I had nice legs. What really gets me about street harassment, the people that say it's harmless or that you should be flattered or to take it as a compliment, don't understand that to the people on the other end of that interaction, the person who's the target has no idea if you're just trying to get a laugh, if you're just trying to flirt, or if you really want me to respond. How do I know that you don't have a weapon? How do I know that you're not going to follow me home if I don't give you the attention you want? And that's what makes it so scary, and it's just really frustrating for people who don't take it seriously. It's not flattering. It's not a compliment. No one goes home and brags about being hit on the metro.
Tatiana, in terms of demographics, women experience the highest instances of street harassment, of course, but straight women aren't the only people who face it.
Yeah, no. Queer women face it. Trans women face it. What I try to talk about in the book and in the project as a whole is just the layering of identities and how that affects how a person is treated in the street. So it's not just sexism that's working, right? It's also racism. It's also homophobia. It's also transphobia. It's fatphobia. It's all of these things that can happen to a particular person based on their other identities as well. And that can layer and compound the type of violence that they experience. You know, trans women experience a much higher level of violence than cis women do. Black women may be experiencing racism as well. And so all of these things are working at the same time, which is why street harassment is such a serious topic, because we're not just talking about these unwanted, quote unquote, compliments or flattery. We're talking about a real type of violence that's happening. And for certain people and their different identities, that violence is much more extreme. And I think it's really important to talk about that when we talk about street harassment. So we're not just looking at this certain type of narrative of one type of person being harassed by one type of person. We're looking at it at a very complicated and complex way.
Well, we got this call from a non-binary listener who told us about a shift in the attention that they received on the street as time went by. Listen.
I'm Will. I live in Chicago, Illinois. As far as street harassing goes, I am a non-binary assigned male at birth person. So I don't think I ever experienced street harassing in the way that women did until I moved away to a rural area for a couple years, grew out my hair. And then when I came back and had a more feminine external presentation, whenever I would wear long coats or heels or anything outside, I would realize from the moment I returned to the city, I started to have people yell things at me from across the street.
Tatiana, this raises another issue that didn't occur to me at first. We talk about harassment on the street, on the train. It's not just cities, rural areas too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The caller before the last one that you just played talked about someone following her in her car. And I think that that's something that definitely happens in rural areas as well, in these driving cities. I spoke with someone recently who told me that, you know, someone pulled up to her next to her while she was walking, and she didn't respond to them. And they pulled up and then turned around and followed her for blocks. And you can just imagine how frightening and terrifying that is. And I've heard many stories like that, where people are being followed in their cars, they're being stalked. They're being chased while they're running down the street. These things don't just happen in major cities. They happen all over, and especially the driving part. It's particularly scary because they're in this big moving vehicle, and there's anything that they could do to you. And that does happen a lot in driving cultures, which are more like rural areas as well.
Tatiana, we're going to talk about your art in just a moment. But before we do, I want to read an email from Suzanne, who says, if you're a woman in this world, you have been privy to street harassment. I have faced it my entire life. Even now at 52, I cannot walk or bike or maneuver the streets at any time without having to face this. Be on guard and face the subsequent BS feelings that never really change, even after decades of this. It's sad, but I figure it'll stop for me once I'm dead. This is an issue for men to fix, not women. And that makes me want to ask you, Tatiana, speak to men for just one second. This topic, and I get it, can make men defensive. Maybe they're not harassers, especially if they're not harassers. They don't really want to hear a conversation like this. But Suzanne makes the point, this is an issue for men to fix.
It is an issue for men to fix. You know, we are not the ones, we are not harassing ourselves. Men are harassing us. Cis-hetero men in particular are the ones who are harassing us. And so because of that, they'd have to be the ones to stop the behavior. They have to be the ones to stop other men, to stop themselves. And I think it's important for men to really examine themselves and their lives and how they have been sexist and perhaps violent or harassing to women in their lives. And they probably don't think that they are the ones who are yelling at women on the street or catcalling them, and maybe they aren't. But that doesn't excuse them from the issue. That doesn't excuse them from the problem. So I would say to men, to really listen to what I am saying, what these callers are saying, what the women in your lives are saying, to take heed to that and to do something about it, you know, to find yourself some way in the fight against street harassment, in the fight against sexual harassment in general. You know, I think that we can't do this by ourselves. We talk about this as women, but men really are the ones who have to step up and do something about it. I don't think that men should listen to this and get defensive. I don't understand why they would do that. I think when women talk about our experiences, when we talk about our lives, what is seen as it isn't valid, or it isn't real, it isn't right. We are a lot of times being gaslit when we talk about this stuff. And so the first step, I think, is for men to not gaslight us, to listen to us and to believe us, and then to do something about it.
And I'll say something to men listening from another guy. Even if you're not a harasser, and maybe you're not, one thing you can do is talk to your friends, talk to your brothers, talk to other fellas. When you hear harassment, when you see it on the street, see something, say something. Doesn't have to be a big deal. If a guy hears it from another guy, believe me, it sinks in. Tatiana, your work, your artwork, stop telling women to smile. It's become a national and an international project. You've traveled to different cities around the world. Have you seen a difference, even in different cities around America, the stories you've gotten from women? Are there geographical differences? Does the quality or the frequency or the perception of harassment differ depending on where you go across this country?
Yeah, I think it does. And you know, we talked a little bit about rural areas versus urban areas, but there are also just sort of regional cultural differences, you know. So, you know, in the South, people say things like baby and sweetie as terms of endearment, or and so that may be seen differently in the public space, depending on who's using it and how they're using it. Again, driving versus walking, and just your proximity to people. When I moved to New York from Oklahoma, or from Philadelphia, I should say, there's just so many people. You are constantly, you can't help but to interact with folks all of the time. And so, of course, that makes a huge difference. There's also the thing about class. You know, if you're someone who's going to be taking public transportation rather, or versus someone who can afford to just take a car or have a driver everywhere, right? Your experiences of the public space is going to be different. So, yeah, I've definitely seen differences just regionally here in the States. And, of course, I've gone to Mexico City. I've gone to Paris with the work. And there are, of course, regional and cultural differences there as well.
You find differences in the way people perceive or what their threshold is for harassment?
For sure. You know, when I have conversations with women, the first question that I ask them is, how do you define street harassment? I don't ever want to come to someone and tell them that they should be offended by someone or to tell them what street harassment is. I ask them what they define street harassment as. Because I think, you know, say a 16-year-old girl who lives in Miami, her culture, her experiences, her neighborhood, her family, her friends will be different from, say, you know, a middle-aged white woman in middle America. Maybe their experiences and definitions of street harassment will be different. Me as a black woman who's grown up and lived in black areas and neighborhoods most of my life, my experience of street harassment and how I define it might be different from someone else, you know? So I definitely don't want to put that on people. I always ask them, what is your definition of street harassment?
And the important thing here, I mean, this project and this work, the posters on the streets, the book sitting in front of me now, have started and advanced this national conversation, and talking about it, being serious about it, is the first step to helping end it. Still to come, should all conversations initiated by strangers on the street be considered harassment? Because some of you don't think so. We'll hear more from Tatiana and from you in just a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Planet Money is the man who popularized recycling by making a deal with the mafia. It's the bedroom beats maker making hits for Drake and Nicki Minaj, and the woman trying to get her money back from Venmo. Planet Money from NPR.
Tatiana, you talk in your book about the usefulness of anger in responding to street harassment, both in the moment that it's happening and in the art that you make later on. How has anger influenced your work on Stop Telling Women to Smile?
You know, I think the anger and rage that's coming from women and that women experience has been something somewhat of a topic lately, because we are angry. We experience things every day, obviously sexual harassment, street harassment, that make us angry. And I think a lot of times we're told to sort of hide that rage, to silence it. And I think that it's good to put it to use. And for myself, I'm putting it to use in my artwork. I'm saying that I'm angry about this. Street harassment makes me angry. It makes me feel a lot of things, hurt, but also anger. And so I think putting anger to use in your artwork is saying to the world that, hey, this is how I'm being treated. I don't like being treated this way. I don't deserve to be treated this way, and I want to be treated differently. And it's putting that anger to use and being loud about it, being vocal about it. And I think that that's something that is very great and wonderful for women in particular to do.
That's the power of anger. I mean, anger, so often a maligned emotion, one you sort of tamp down. You certainly don't want other people to see it. Boy, can it be good ammo when you need it, huh?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Tatiana, we read, I think I read about this a lot last year. France passed a law against street harassment. This was last year. More than 450 people have been fined for catcalling on the streets of France. You've presented your work in Paris. It's a little different here. We have the First Amendment, of course. We're used to these arguments. Could something like that work in the United States, or, I don't know, let's say on the streets of Philadelphia, the streets of New York, you can get a summons if a cop sees you do it?
You know, I'm not too sure about that, and I'm a little hesitant to say that we should have something like that for, you know, sexual harassment in public spaces, for gender-based street harassment in particular. And there are things, you know, about stalking and, you know, public, you know, things that can be fit into the world of street harassment, laws against that I think are fitting. But when it comes to being criminalizing folks for catcalling, I don't want to do that. And I think that that's because, you know, there are already groups of people who are already being criminalized for things, and I don't want to invite the cops and to invite the authorities into something like this. For me as an artist, it's more of a cultural thing. It's more of a social thing. It's more of saying, this is how we're being treated. Don't do this. And like a sort of broad, making it a taboo thing, right? But I would never call the cops on someone for harassing me in the street. And I think that that's because as a Black woman, my experience of the cops and the police is something that I don't want to invite. I don't believe in the cops and the criminal justice system, and so I don't want that to be a part of this. So I'm hesitant to do that, right? But I can see how some folks can see it being useful. But for me, I would shy away from that for sure.
Well, we're hearing from so many listeners with their comments, and also a couple of questions for you, Tatiana. Let's get to a few of them. Ruth emailed to say, when I was younger, I went through a period where I lost a lot of weight and went from what I would have been considered as fat to trim and then fit, and I started to get catcalled a lot. Sadly, I was actually flattered, even when the catcalls were vulgar. How sad that I accepted society's emphasis on my outer beauty as the most valuable thing about me, and even saw vulgar street harassment as validation. And we got this from Amy. I would love to hear your suggestions on how to help my 18-year-old daughter when she is harassed in the street. She gets harassed in our small city and in larger cities, and she's made to feel less than, and it's about how she dresses. It's horrible to watch her go through all this negativity and feel like she's alone in dealing with it and that it's her fault and it's not okay. Amy asks for some advice on how to help her 18-year-old daughter cope with harassment. Tatiana, what do you say?
Mm-hmm. I would invite her daughter to read books like Stop Telling Women to Smile, but also to just gather as much knowledge and information from other people who are experiencing the same thing. I think one of the things with street harassment is that we feel alone in it. Even though it's something that happens in the public space, it feels like this private thing that only we are experiencing. So I can imagine for an 18-year-old or even someone younger, it feels like it makes you want to hide away. Like, this is the only, this is happening to me and only me. And so I would say to find some type of community around it, whether that's in the online space or just getting resources about it and saying, no, this happens to a lot of folks and you are not alone in this. And I think something about that makes you feel more confident and more assertive in yourself. And hopefully the 18-year-old will feel some more agency over her body, feel more confident and assertive in saying that I don't want this to happen to me and standing up against it, knowing that she's in a community of people who are experiencing the same thing or not also fighting against it.
Well, we got this email from Matt who says, please elaborate on what is unacceptable versus what is appropriate flirting. I was encouraged to be forward and flirtatious by women as a young man. I was never any good at it because I'm shy, but for a long time, I was under the impression that being forward and flirtatious was what women wanted. Tatiana, what do you say to Matt?
I think a lot of men have the same thing. You know, we've been socialized to be certain ways. I think a lot of men are simply performing a type of masculinity that they have been taught and socialized to do. Yes, I've been taught that I should be straightforward and I should go after women and I should be aggressive towards women because that's what a man does and that's what women want. And so a lot of this is an undoing and saying, actually, no, you know, there are appropriate times to flirt and there are appropriate times not. And there are times when you don't flirt. And I think in the street, and when you don't know a person and a stranger is walking past you, perhaps that's not the right time to comment on their attractiveness or to approach them, right? I think it's using social cues, understanding when a person doesn't want to talk to you, understanding when a person is minding their own business, and also understanding that, no, we don't necessarily want you to be aggressive towards us, right? Like, come up with a better way to date, to come up with a better way to flirt with people, to meet people, you know, because it's not about you. It's about this woman getting home safely. It's about this woman getting home without feeling like she is sexualized. And I think if we consider that first, then how a man approaches a woman comes second, right? I think a lot of times men try to center themselves, like, well, how do I date women? How do I meet women? That's not necessarily what this conversation is, right? This conversation is about a woman feeling safe in the streets. And I think if men put that first, then maybe they would sort of restructure how they question this conversation.
And again, for men, I'll make it even simpler if I can. It's about empathy. Put yourself in the other person's shoes, and before you speak, think about how you would feel if you were them, and that might make you feel differently. Even if you're not a catcaller, that might help you navigate how to approach that person a little bit differently, and probably with more confidence because you'll be empathetic to how they feel. Well, we're talking with Tatiana Fazlalizadeh, and we'll have more with her after a short break, including some pushback that we've gotten from some of our listeners. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Target. Entrepreneur Ray Phillips reflects on the mentorship and support he's received from Target throughout his journey.
Really, to have a company like Target extend a helping hand and guide us along in the process, it makes all the difference for any striving company looking to play on a higher level.
Learn more about how Target supports diverse entrepreneurs at target.com/founderswelove.
Wake up to a fresh take on the day's news with Up First every weekday morning, and now Saturdays at 8 a.m. Eastern, too.
10 minutes is all you'll need to start your day informed, and now you can listen 6 days a week.
I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro. Up First to start your weekend from NPR News.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about catcalling and other types of street harassment. And Tatiana, I want to talk about a little bit of pushback because we have gotten that as well. Allie emailed this. I'm a 45-year-old white female who is fine with catcalling and flirting. I've lived in Philadelphia, the Caribbean, Europe, New Orleans. I'm attractive, I'm confident, and it doesn't bother me. I see it as a bump in my day at best and pervy at the worst. I think it's natural, and I dread the day that I don't attract the opposite or same sex for that matter. Does that just make me shallow? Tatiana, what do you think?
I don't know if it makes her shallow. I think that she simply is having a different experience, you know? And again, I think there's something to be said. This is a 45-year-old white woman who's experiencing this. It's very different from a 20 or a 30-year-old black or brown woman who's experiencing this. I'm sure this woman has a lot of different experiences in the street than other women do, based on their identities. And so perhaps the harassment or the treatment that she receives, she experiences it and takes it in a different way based on her life. And so I would never again want to tell her you should be harassed by something or you should feel harassed by something or call her shallow. I think that we are different people and we experience things differently. But I also don't want people to hear that and to think that it's okay to catcall women at all.
We heard from one listener who thinks there should be a distinction between compliments from a passerby and unwelcome attention from strangers. Here's what she had to say.
This is Noelle from D.C. I would say there really is a difference between catcalling and a man really taking the time to give a nice compliment to a woman. I mean, I'm someone, when I receive compliments like, you know, like beautiful or gorgeous or, you know, whoever has you is very lucky, I don't find that threatening. I find it just someone recognizing you and saying, I want to compliment you.
Tatiana, you've said that you're not assigning offense to any woman who perceives interactions in the street any which way she wants, but Noelle's talking about the distinction there between harassment and compliments.
Yeah, you know, I think that we need to give more credit to women when it comes to us deciphering what is a compliment and what is not. You know, I know very well what a compliment is and what a compliment isn't. And so I don't want someone to tell me that I should take something as a compliment because I know what a compliment is. You know, Rakia, someone who's in the book, we talk a lot about in her chapter about the distinction between a simple good morning, right? She gets good morning from men a lot in the street, but she understands as a near 40-year-old woman the intent behind that good morning based on how they say it, what they do to her when they say it, how they look at her when they say it, right? And someone from the outside might look at that and say, well, they're just saying good morning to you. Maybe you're just, you know, brushing off a nice greeting. But she's a smart woman. She's a capable woman. She's a woman who can understand the difference between a good morning that has sexual intent behind it and just a regular greeting from a neighbor, right? So I think that when we say, hey, this is not a compliment, or that good morning isn't just a greeting, there's something else behind that there, then we should listen and believe those women as well and give them credit. So to that caller, I would say, yes, perhaps they are giving her a compliment. I get compliments on the street sometimes too, but I also understand the difference between those regular compliments and men who are harassing me in the street.
Tatiana, women are the targets of the vast majority of harassment in public places. There's no doubt about it. What about when men harass other men? It does happen, though the dynamics are probably different in a lot of cases. Does your audience, when you go to cities around the world, does your audience ever talk to you about that?
Yeah, you know, I've definitely had some queer men, some feminine-presenting men talk to me about, you know, cis hetero men harassing them in the street based on how they present themselves. You know, I think there's, again, in the public space, there are a lot of different types of harassment that happen. So looking at homophobia, xenophobia, all types of things, you know, men getting harassed based on their, you know, visible religion. Things like that happen for sure, you know, and I think that that is definitely a conversation that we should all be considering, just how people are experiencing the public and their safety and being in danger in the public just for who they are and how they present themselves, you know. But definitely I've heard from men who are more feminine presenting and want to talk about how they are harassed in the street as well.
Have you ever heard from straight men who complain about harassment from apparently gay men or other men in the street or in a restaurant or a bar?
I have not.
Oh, you have not.
I have not heard of any of that before. Maybe that happens, but I have not.
I think it does happen. I think it's relatively rare. It does happen. And as I said, mm-hmm. the dynamics are different. It's also very possible that men, because of the dynamics between them and other men, may not perceive it in the same way that a woman on the street perceives it. And also, in the vast majority of cases, that man's safety is not threatened.
And for sure.
And so that's probably a huge factor. His safety isn't threatened. He may not like it. He may just brush it off. Well, Tatiana, your work, Stop Telling Women to Smile, how many cities? Now, actually, let's talk about the work on the street. We have the book. You go out on the street with wheat paste and posters. I mean, street art down on the street where cops are around the corner, and you've done this in cities across the world.
Yeah, I have. You know, I've traveled to several cities across the states and several cities across the world. And also the work is accessible to the larger public now. And there are posters that people could download on my site. And so it's become more of a collaborative process, a more community-based project where people can go out in the street and we paste the work themselves. But yes, the streets are the site of the actual artwork. And I think it's very important that it remains there. You know, this work is for folks to pass by and to feel like they have some sense of defense for themselves in the street, some sense of solidarity in the street. And so going out in the street with paper and wheat paste is a very huge part of this work.
It's a kind of street activism that street art, a lot of it, aspires to be. What's next for you? New York City, people see your work on the streets. They're going to see it in this book. Hopefully they're seeing it online as we talk here. What's next for your artistic efforts?
Yeah, so the book is out, and this has been a wonderful process to put this work into the book. For the rest of the year, I'm continuing to make new work that is based on the similar themes, you know, women, race, gender, looking at Black folks, queer folks, women, and how we experience the world. I'm a painter, so I'm making paintings all the time, and I'm also creating new public art pieces that I'll be presenting later on this year.
And Give me a list of the cities where people can see your work if they're walking in the street. We mentioned New York. There's Philadelphia. Where else?
Sure. You know, again, other people have access to the work. So the work is up in cities that I don't even know, you know.
Oh, so people are taking your images and pasting them up themselves. It's that's more than a street artist. That's a bit of a movement. Well,
yeah.
Tatiana Fazlizadeh, I want to thank you for joining us and for helping us with this discussion. I really appreciate it. The book is Stop Telling Women to Smile, Stories of Street Harassment and How We're Taking Back Our Power. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Remember, you can see images from Tatiana's new book at the website, the1a.org, or on our Twitter account, @1a. This conversation was produced by Stacia Brown and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us. This is 1A.